Hello and welcome to WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop shop for all the sports information that you need, given to you in a unique, original way. Plenty of shows that you can get at any given time, right on the show's page. Exclusive interviews where we pluck those big interviews out and give them to you. Also, every single week, Robert Drummond, NFL, SU, and CFL alum, talks with me and back on the field. That's located right on the top of the exclusive interviews page, and you'll see a little bit of a change. The newest of the episodes is on top with the archive dating all the way back to the first one below it. So you could go new to old now and get all the information that you need there from Robert Drummond as well as myself in our weekly conversations. You can also head to the leaderboard page. Anytime we have any type of fan event going on where there's standings or trying to figure out who's in first place and whatnot, including the bracket challenge that we'll have coming up very shortly this year. Hard to believe that March is just around the corner, but we will have that and so much more on the leaderboard page, along with all of the sponsors, how to get in touch with them, directions to them, very, very simple ways to be a part of the show and be a part of everything we do here. And we have the fan line, along with Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and iTunes. The fan line, 315-503-1326, which is 315-5031-FAN, gives you the opportunity to talk with me and be included in the show and on the website in specials like what we're doing here today. To give you an example of what it's like to be on the fan line, the back and forth between me and you, because I care about your opinions. I care about what you have to say. Some people that you call might take your opinion. If you disagree with them, hang up on you. They might not give you an opportunity to say anything more than a couple words. And they might not ever refer back to what you said if they don't like it, don't agree with it, or don't know it. That's not what it's like here. That's not what you'll ever get when you call Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora or any of the shows that I have here for Dan Tatora Broadcast Media, LLC, featured on WakeUpCallDT.com. When you call the show, you, the individual, are treated important. You're treated like anybody else that I would talk to, from interviews with athletes, coaches, former staff members, people that play, people that have played, people that are hoping to play soon. No matter who I'm talking to, you get my respect, and I let you sit on the phone and justify your opinion, and be it in a respectful way, always take that opinion. So here's a few examples of people that have been longtime listeners, Jason from Maryland and Brian from New York, that you can listen to and their thoughts on Syracuse's last game against Cincinnati as they head into their match with Villanova. So you could just go back and listen to this at any time to get a feel for it. If you've never called before, a little bit nervous about calling, this is an example, a few examples, of what it's like to call the show. And this is my way of saying thank you to you, featuring you right here on the front page of the show, under the fan line, to tell you that I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to call the show and be a part of it. So we'll start first with Jason and then into Brian. God bless, and I'll talk to you all very soon. And make sure right under this, you get all the information you need on the Super Bowl party, and head over to Woody's with us. Here on the fan line with Jason from Maryland, calling in after Syracuse's win over Cincinnati. And I don't know if you call it a win, but it's a win either way. So that win coming up against Cincinnati. And Jason, what do you have to say?
Well, considering, I mean, let's go back to Saturday. They played a highly emotional, physical. It was really a great basketball game Saturday at Louisville. A game I did not think they would win. I thought they would lose by double digits. And once again, they showed why I'm not a prognosticator. But those guys came to play. It was a great win on Saturday, but to have to turn around and play an underrated, I think, really good Cincinnati team in a day game, which is strange. Usually it's a turnaround, it's a 2-day turnaround, but you get a night game. They had to play at 3:30, so, and it was tough on Cincinnati too. I'm not making any excuses, but I think that had something to do with some of the ragged play at the beginning of the game. Syracuse in the first half, really, and Cincinnati really offensively were awful. I felt the defense was pretty good. It was a good game to win because I think it was a stressful game. obviously they were behind for most of it, at least in the second half, and they really had to make all the plays down the stretch to win. And I just think playing in that type of setting, coming off a huge emotional win on the road and then coming back home and having to play another game that quickly, I think is going to help the team in a lot of different ways. Because, you know, when you're playing in tournaments, that's kind of how it is. It's a, you get one day off and you play again. You can play in the day or whatever. So it was good in that sense. But as far as, like, the overall game, the bottom line I took from it was we played terrible pretty much the entire game on offense and still won the game. Michael Carter-Williams, as much as I complain about some of his decision-making, and, you know, he took a couple of terrible shots in that game, he has something that Brandon Trish doesn't have, and this isn't really knocking him, but he just has no fear. Like, Michael Carter-Williams has no fear. So if the game's on the line, and that can be a good or a bad thing, but so far it's been a great thing with Mike. If the game's on the line, he wants the ball. He wants to shoot the free throws. He wants, he wants all that on him because he's not afraid. Brandon, I think, thinks too much, more of a cerebral guy, and thinks too much. And I think it kind of showed itself at the end of the game when he went to the line with a chance to ice it up, too, and he bricked his free throw. We all know Brandon's probably one of the best, if not the best, free throw shooter on the team, and he clanked it, and you could just tell his body language wasn't good. Mike, on the other hand, when he gets in those situations, it's like he revels, or he loves those situations. And so that's what I take from this game. I think you can build on it. There's a lot of things to work on, especially with the big men. I mean, 42 minutes between the three guys and only 2 points and 5 rebounds is just not going to get the job done. They have got to get better underneath. You can't depend on CJ and Brandon and Mike to do this every single game. It's just too much to ask because there's two guards and Trevor plays a little bit, but basically they're playing 38 minutes a game. So you got to get something from your big guys, and that would be the biggest takeaway from this game. We won, but there's a lot to be worked on before we go to Villanova.
No, and I can definitely understand that, Jason. Speaking with Jason here on the Fan Line, 315-503-1-FAN, also 315-503-1326 to get those numbers out there to you. And, you know, you touched on three guys, C.J. Fair, Brandon Trish, and Michael Carter-Williams. I've added in Jeremy Grant in the last three games here, and I've dubbed them the Feisty Four. What do you have to say about that?
I love it. I mean, it's apropos because Jeremy Grant, and I was talking about this with someone else the other day, is a Syracuse guy. He's got length, he's athletic and all that. But one thing that's different about him, and I'm not knocking, I love Syracuse basketball, I love the university. I'm not knocking any previous players. But one thing I love about Jeremy is he does not care if he has to dive on the floor, dive into the crowd. If there's a loose ball, he's going after it 100%, and that's what I love about the kid. He's got the pedigree and all that other stuff, and, he could just lay back and not be aggressive and kind of just take his time or whatever, but when he's on the court, he's going 100 miles an hour. He might make a mistake, but he's going to make it going full speed, and I really am impressed by him. I think he is going to be a great, great player once he fills out. He's like a taller version of CJ. He's just in the right place at the right time. He's not afraid. He's like Michael Carter-Williams that way. He's not afraid to take chances and to, go to the basket. I mean, he might not always make the right play. I don't think Coach Boeheim liked the drive at the end of the game, but I did. I thought, I like guys that go to the rack and put the pressure on the opposing team to play defense, and that's what he does. So the Feisty Four, man, I'm all for it. I love it. I think all four of those guys bring something exceptional to the team. And, I like the nickname, and hopefully it sticks.
Yeah, I think this is a nickname that can only stick if these guys are willing to go out there and be in effect on the team at all times. But, when you look inside, it really is C.J. Fair and Jeremy Grant right now. I mean, you're not getting anything from Baikita, which a lot of people didn't expect anyways. You're not getting too much offense from Rakeem Christmas. Daywon Coleman barely saw any time on the court today. So, you know, I think that those are the guys that have really stepped up without James Sutherland. And, you know, you've been a fan for a long time. Do you feel like this team is moving forward in a positive way without James? I mean, they are 3-0, but are you seeing as a fan what you want to see, or do you feel that James Sutherland truly is missed?
That's a great question, Dan. Honestly, and this is going to shock a lot of people, I don't think they miss him as much as you would think. The reason being is I think Jeremy Grant does everything just as good or better than James does, except shoot threes. But Jeremy doesn't shoot threes. Usually he's going to the basket. The one thing they miss without James in there is the threat of the three. But if you look at the statistics once again this year, his percentages went way, way down when Big East play started, James' three-point shooting percentage. He's very streaky sometimes. It can be really bad because the offense gets bogged down. So, honestly, my concern, and I love James, and I hope it gets worked out, but my biggest concern with this team isn't him. It's the big guys. They've got to find a way to – Team Christmas has got to find a way to make an impact in games. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he's not making any type of impact. You cannot have 4-on-5 offensively. You just can't do it. When they get into the tournament and they're playing really good teams, they've got to have some kind of contribution from Daywon or from Rock, because Bai's more of a defensive guy, so I don't think you're going to get that from him. But Rock has shown he can score around the basket. He was much better last year. I don't know what's going on with him, but he has not played well. Boeheim's really been quick to yank him. So honestly, my bigger concern, and I love James, but my bigger concern is the inside play, because we're not getting enough. And when you get into the tournament, while it's great to have, and probably more important to have, guards that can get to the basket and all that, you've got to have something underneath the basket you got to have some guys that can score underneath. It doesn't have to be a post-up game, but at least be able to grab some boards and putbacks and stuff like that. And we didn't even have that today. We got nothing from those guys. So that's my bigger concern. I do hope we get James back, because I do think it does spread the defense out. It makes it easier for Michael Carter-Williams to get in the lane. It makes it easier for CJ to slash and do what he needs to do. Definitely would stop, but I think it would maybe keep teams from zoning us so much. Because at this point, if I'm coaching against Syracuse, I zone them 40 for 40 minutes. I mean, you got to make guys, make shots, and that's not our strong point. So, like I said, the team misses James. I think he brings something to the team, but at the same time, I think the bigger concern is the guys that are playing at this point not getting the job done as far as the interior players. So,
and what I find funny is the fact that Syracuse has had such trouble, and I talk with some of the guys about this, so that'll be coming up soon, but Syracuse has experienced so much trouble playing up against zones despite the fact that they play in a zone. So you would think that this being a team that 2-3 zone is all that they do, that they would understand that they know how to play against it, that they would practice against it at all times. I mean, it seems like man is the only thing that they truly go up against. And being in the locker room after the Cincinnati game, that's what I was told by that locker room, was that they don't usually play against a zone in practice, which is very surprising to me, because you should know how to beat yourself. Because if you don't know how to beat yourself, then you can't fight against it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree. There's 2 points I wanted to make about the game today that I just thought of. The first one, going to your point and the way you attack a zone, the way teams attack our zone generally is, and Connecticut was really good at it, is basically they get a guy in the high post that's got a good mid-range game that can turn and go to the basket or pass. My thing with our offense is it tends to bog down in the half court, and it becomes a Michael Carter-Williams to Brandon Trish pass fest on the outside. And they don't really get into a really good set offense a lot of the time. if I mean, and this is just a layperson. I'm obviously not Coach Boeheim, who knows probably forgotten more basketball than I'll ever know. But if it's me, I would think they would want to run the offense through CJ, because CJ is a very, very versatile player. You can bring him through to the top of the key to get in between those two guys. He can turn, face the basket, either go to the basket or dump it down low, and maybe that gets these big guys going, or he kicks it out for a three, but it just seemed like they had no clue how to attack that defense. It's a little bit of a bothering thing, because you know teams are going to do it, and I really think they have the perfect guy to beat a zone in C.J. Fair, because he's so versatile. He can put the ball on the floor, he can get to the rack, he goes hard to the rack, he can pass, he's a good rebounder. So I don't know what their plan was today, but it certainly seemed like it was a lot more stagnant offense, not a lot of set plays, and that's concerning. And then you look at the defensive end, and here's something, maybe I don't know if you noticed this, Dan, because I think you were there, but on TV I noticed they let Jackson, when they were on defense, Syracuse, they let Jackson catch the ball at the foul line, basically daring him to shoot. But then when he got the ball, they doubled him, and he would kick out to Kilpatrick or Parker or who's the other guy?
You're talking about Kazmir Wright, right? Kazmir Wright?
Yeah. And I didn't understand why they were doing that. I thought the defensive plan was, let Jackson shoot jump shots, because he can't shoot. And it just seemed like every time they passed to him, they would wait a little bit, and then he would just kind of stand there, and then they would try to, I guess, double him, and he would kick out to somebody for a three, and they just kept making shots. And I'm just like, are they going to do any, are they going to change anything? Are they going to start trapping out of the zone? Are they going to, it seemed like they were slow to adjust in the second half. I thought Cincinnati really, really cooked our zone in the second half. And if it wasn't for really a perfect last 3 minutes of this game, I think we lose. So that's a concern too.
No, I definitely agree that, this is a team that really didn't know in this game how to face off against Cincinnati. You look at Cincinnati taking the lead with 17:25 left to go in the game, and they didn't give up that lead until just inside 20 seconds. And obviously, it doesn't matter how long you hold the lead if you don't hold it at the end, but it does say a lot about the team in the fact that they were very, very successful against Syracuse, and they love to shoot the three, and that's one way to beat the zone, is to go out and shoot the three. You saw Providence do it, South Florida did it, Louisville tried to do it, and you see Cincinnati do it. There's teams that really will not give up on it, and you almost wonder when it's not falling like it wasn't for Cincinnati in the first half, only making 4 of 18, that maybe you go away from it and try and fight inside like some of these other teams have done, but that didn't happen. This was a team that was living and dying by it, and it's strange to me that some coaches do this, but it is one of those ways that, it's a textbook way to beat the zone. So when you look inside of the book, they say, listen, this is how you do it, because if we're hitting threes and they're going inside on us, we're always going to have the advantage. And, that's gone against Syracuse, and I know that I gave this statistic before where Syracuse playing in the 2-3 zone recently, not this season but before, had 6 straight games where there was a team that came in shooting a certain percentage from 3-point and ended up shooting better than that against Syracuse, and Syracuse was 1-5 in those 6 games. So the danger is when Syracuse meets one of these teams that doesn't have a bad first half or a bad second half, and when they turn on, they stay on, because those are the teams, even not just the UConns and Villanovas that have done it before and Louisville, but also your Vermonts that have done that before to Syracuse and beaten them in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So, these are things that Syracuse has to look out for. They have to be active on the zone. They have to move around. I give credit to Trevor Cooney, who had 4 steals in the game to make up for, what Syracuse needed help with, where they weren't getting shooting. He was at least giving them opportunities, and they condensed their turnovers. I mean, this is a team that only had 6 turnovers in the entire game. And in the last game, Michael Carter-Williams had 8 by himself. So Syracuse was doing some good things on offense and good things on defense, but it's a question that always comes back. Syracuse, not the greatest jump shooting team. How do they go up against teams that are good at jump shooting? And I think that they're getting very, very close to knowing what it feels like to not win a game. And Coach Boeheim kept talking about getting better, we got to get better, getting better, getting better, but he didn't specify. And I think the easiest way to do it is to simplify things and say they have to shoot the ball better in the jump shot. They have to be able to make their shots, and this is not a team that's shown that consistently.
Yeah, and I agree 100% with everything you just said. One other thing I thought of while I was watching this game, and it's funny you mentioned Vermont because it reminded me of that game. Despite the fact that we were ahead 22-18 in the first half, we were not getting good shots. We weren't making shots. We couldn't rebound. I mean, neither could Cincinnati. But there's certain times where I really believe Jim needs to – I know he's set in his ways, but I really feel like he needs to make the team he's playing against pick up the pace. Like, they were just eating shot clock, it was just going back and forth like a really slow-paced Princeton game from the 80s. And Syracuse is an up-tempo, transition-based team. So when they get out and run, they can blow you off the court. And I still think this team has a good press, but we never see it. And I really thought in the first half, you know, when we were struggling, that you know, when he goes to that, generally, not all the time, and I'm sure he would tell you this, generally it starts to spark our team. Because you get a little energy, you get some adrenaline, you're moving around, and yeah, you might give up a basket or two, but it gets you going. And once they get going, usually they get into a flow, and then they're off to the races. And I would just like to see, I'm not saying he did anything bad about the zone. They're a great zone defensive team, one of the best, if not the best, defensive teams in the nation. So I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying sometimes I feel like our defense hurts our offense, meaning it's because we stand around and they pass the ball around the arc for half an hour and then chuck up a shot. And we're just, you know, we're kind of stagnant, and we get the ball and we're on offense, and our half-court offense is not very good. So I just think sometimes maybe we need to go to a press or trap out of the 2-3 zone. He did that one time, and we forced a turnover. So, I mean, I don't think he's using all the weapons he has yet. I mean, I really think Jeremy Grant in a press is a nightmare for teams because he's so long and he's so athletic. I really think we could use that to our advantage. And the reason why I thought of Vermont is I remember watching that Vermont game saying, why don't we press this team? And because they don't have the athletes, they don't have the height, they don't have any advantage in a game where we're pressing them and speeding the game up. And that's when I get frustrated with the team, is when I feel like we're playing basically into another team's hands. And I felt like we kind of did that today. I mean, Kazmir Wright was coming off an injury, so he's not 100%. So you want to push these guys. You want to make them work, press them, pressure them, make them uncomfortable. And I just didn't. I felt like we did that at Louisville in our zone. I felt like our zone was super active in that game, but I didn't feel like it was as much today. And so I don't know. Maybe it's just me blowing smoke, but I just think it helps with the activity whenever you get into presses and you're trapping and you're switching your defenses up a little bit. I think it can change the momentum of a game, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree, though, Dan.
No, you know, I can see where you're coming from, definitely, and it makes a lot of sense, Jason. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, I've been a fan of the press. And, you know, there'll always be somebody, if a shot goes overhead of the press, you know, if somebody passes the ball and they get it up front and there's easy baskets, then you got to pull back from it. Yeah, okay, well, that's common sense. There's going to be mistakes. I understand that. But I feel like the 2-3 zone is bought into so much by people to the point where they make comments like that, like, oh, well, they got a fast break, so you got to get rid of it. It's like, well, they had 20 points on the 2-3 zone, and they gave up 2 in the full court press, so I don't really think they need to get rid of it right now. And you're right, you know. One thing I can say in listening to what you had to say is, if Syracuse could take Jeremy Grant and multiply him by 9 or 10, I think that would show your athleticism, your height, your tenacity. I mean, this is a guy that's jumping to the ball. He wants every single chance at it, and I know he does. You know, this is a guy who told me in the beginning of the season, he told me one word. He said, energy. I want to be the energy. And I asked him about that. I was like, how are you doing being the energy? You know, and he's talking to me about every little thing, anything that he can do to get better, you know. And this is a guy who went from playing 10 minutes combined between the Providence-South Florida game to jumping up to 29 minutes against Villanova, 35 minutes out of 40 against Louisville, and 28 minutes against Cincinnati. I mean, this is a man who is coming out and being asked to start for the first time ever in the game against Cincinnati, to come out in the second half and be a starter. So, you know, Jeremy Grant is one of these guys that you really have to look to moving forward. That's why he's part of the Feisty Four, and it's not just three guys, because I think that he does too much. You know, he led the team in rebounds heavily on the defensive side against Cincinnati. This is a guy who is double-digit points, 13 against Villanova, 10 against Louisville. He's the guy that chased down the rebound that nobody was going after against Louisville to set up a shot that helped Syracuse get to a place where Michael Carter-Williams could steal the ball and give them the advantage. So he's doing these little things that are really showing up. He's more on the boards than Rakeem Christmas. He's more tenacious and energetic than Rakeem Christmas, Daywon Coleman, or Baikita. And he's scoring, which none of these guys are doing. I mean, Baikita playing 20 minutes in the game against Cincinnati and not scoring a single point. The man played 22 minutes. So, you know, I know that he's not known to be an offensive presence, but, you know, geez, at the beginning of the season, he sure was an offensive presence and showing that he can work on his hands, and he's gotten better there. So, you know, I think the bench got even shorter because Jeremy Grant's stepping up and Rakeem Christmas is not. Daywon Coleman's really not getting the opportunity to, but I know that he wants it. And Baikita has gone quiet again. And I think that when you get into these games, you make perfect sense, Jason, because once you hit the NCAA tournament, people have seen more than 30 games of film on the 2-3 zone. It happens every single season. So they know what they need to do. And there's these teams that creep out, the Hawaii before, Vermont. There's teams like Richmond. They come out of the woodwork to go after Syracuse and find ways to take them down. And Syracuse has to shoot better. They have to be more tenacious inside. And Jeremy Grant's the guy to do it, but Daywon Coleman has the body to do it, so he has to do it. He has the biggest body on the team to push the Georgetowns and UConns and Pittsburghs out of the way, and he's going to have to learn how to do that because the Big Ten's going to come calling, the Big 12, the SEC, and they like that inside presence, and he's going to have to be that inside presence for Syracuse because he's like two or three of Jeremy Grant, even though Jeremy Grant is playing a lot tougher than everybody else besides C.J. Fair inside. So, you know, and when you look at the forward position for Syracuse, so, you know, I think they have to learn how to play the press and beat the press because they're going to get a ton of press. Kansas, Ohio State, all those teams are going to press you like heck because they know that they could beat you that way. Louisville's coming to the Dome, and they're going to have to face them again. So, you know, and St. John's is an up-and-coming team that Jim Boeheim's spoken highly of. So, you know, there's a lot to say about what the road is ahead for Syracuse. And one thing that is known is you don't miss James Sutherland because he was inconsistent if you can learn how to be consistent and make your shots, but play defense. James Sutherland didn't play defense, so you're not losing defense. You need to have these guys step up. And, you know, if I'm C.J. Fair and I'm Jeremy Grant, I'm going to Rakeem Christmas and Baikita and Daywon Coleman, and I'm saying, listen, guys, we can only do so much. Fair's playing 40 minutes a game. I'm playing, you know, if I'm Jeremy Grant saying I'm playing 30, so I need you guys to play 10 at the bare minimum. And they have to move forward in that respect. So before I let you go, Jason, great points as always. I got to ask you your top play of the game and your top player of the game.
Top play and top player, I think, pretty much involve the same guy. I'm gonna take Michael Carter-Williams for the player of the game. Dagger three to tie the game. The play of the game was the dunk. When he really wants to get to the rack, man, he's unbelievable. He was so fresh on that dunk, man. It was almost like he hadn't even been playing. I mean, he went to the rim, the big guy was there, and he's like, no, I'm moving. And he just threw it down. It was a great, great play, probably the play of the game, and it'll probably be on SportsCenter and be one of the top plays. It was, it's a typical Syracuse play. Athleticism, strength, got to the basket, and a big play. I mean, the guy made big plays all game. So I definitely, that's my play of the game. Definitely my player of the game would be Mike. I could give it to C.J. Fair every game. You should rename it the C.J. Fair Award, actually. But I'm going to give it to Mike today because C.J.'s always so consistent. But today I'm going with Mike.
Well, I appreciate it as always, Jason. You took up half of the hour of the show, so, you know, but...
I'm sorry, dude. You can edit it down.
No, but as always, you know, great stuff here. And, you know, I appreciate you calling in and being a fan of the show and keeping with the show. It's people like you that remind me why I get up in the morning, work as hard as I do, and do as much as I do. So I appreciate it. As always, I cannot thank you enough for that. So, you know, like I said, if we could multiply the Jeremy Grants of the world, well, I'd like to multiply the Jason from Maryland's of the world, and I'd be pretty happy with that.
I really appreciate that, Dan. It means a lot to me, man. Really do.
Well, take care of yourself, and it means a lot to me to have you call in and be a part of the show, and hopefully we'll talk to you very soon. And you know,
absolutely.
All right, man?
All right, man. Take care, Dan.
All right, you too. Here with Brian from Syracuse on the Fan Line. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, and obviously we have a lot to talk about here. Syracuse had a few games since the last time we talked, two big games, two close games, and what did you want to start off talking about?
Well, I guess the big thing is the play of Brandon Trish. I mean, he had a really great, first half at Louisville, and he really showed what he can do. And then the last 5 minutes or so of the Cincinnati game, he just took it over. And when we needed him to, and he did it, so that was really nice to see. A lot of people have gotten down on him over the last 3 years, but it's nice to see all that development finally starting to pay off a little bit.
Yeah, I think what is great about Brandon Trish, and he doesn't get a lot of credit for it, C.J. Fair is a guy who I've called Mr. Consistency, but even more so on the side of Brandon Trish, Trish is the only player on Syracuse's roster, the only player, and just for, reference, James Sutherland was nowhere close. Trish is the only guy who has spent the majority of his games, 16 of 19 games in double figures. So he's the only guy on the team that's only spent three games under double figures. C.J. Fair is just a couple games behind that. So, Trish, as far as getting the ball in the basket, people talk about 25 points a game, why doesn't he have 10 assists, this, that, and the other. But this man is getting to the basket and cashing in at the basket, whether it be three-point or right in front of the rim, more so than Michael Carter-Williams, James Sutherland, C.J. Fair, or anybody else you want to name. So I think that that's something that definitely goes unnoticed, and it shouldn't, that Brandon Trish is working a lot harder than people give him credit for.
Yeah, I'm really glad to see it, too, because we definitely need it from him. I mean, I think somebody said, I can't remember who, but somebody had said that watching Michael Carter-Williams play basketball was like watching a yo-yo for 40 minutes. He's down, he's up, he's down, he's up. And, it gets, for a fan, I'm a hardcore fan, and I put a lot of, I put a lot of myself into being a fan, and man, he can give you a heart attack sometimes. Just about, my blood pressure is through the roof yesterday watching him play.
Yeah, I think that, Michael Carter-Williams, there's been a lot of positives that he can bring forward to the team, but there's also, the fact that in that Louisville game there was 8 turnovers. Now, at the end of the game, he stays with it. He doesn't give up. You see an improvement from Scoop Jardine. You see an improvement from a Johnny Flynn in the fact that this guy goes after 2 steals at the end of the game to secure a victory for Syracuse, and they would have been down without that. So, that definitely gives them some hope there, but at the same time, the 8 turnovers were being cashed in on the other side by Louisville that put Syracuse in the position that they were in. So, like you said, there is that yo-yo effect with Michael Carter-Williams because there is the positive, but the positives are coming after the negatives that put Syracuse in the hole in the first place. So, there definitely has to be some growth there, and I think that, I think that one of the things that started to come up with people is Jim Boeheim, and why doesn't it ever look like he reprimands him, and he doesn't say anything in the post-game press conferences, and he doesn't say anything during the games.
And I think that that's a question that's come up with some people. As a fan, does that concern you that you don't really see him being reprimanded?
No, and I think I know why. I mean, I think Michael Carter-Williams gets down way before Boeheim ever thinks he could, you know. And, I mean, he pulled him out for a little while yesterday when they were having trouble scoring. And, you know, I think that, that makes the point. I mean, I don't think that he's somebody you got to get down on the bench. And I think it'd probably be a little counterproductive because if it's like the Iron Chef comment that Boeheim made last night. You know, the kid's got loads of confidence in his shot. And the problem is that if you take any of that confidence away from him, I mean, he's going to hit even less. And I think that, you know, with as much as we need scoring right now without Sutherland playing, I don't think he can afford to really get down on him.
And so, you know, you look at, and you bring up a good point there in the fact that, you know, maybe this is something that Trish over time can take. And everybody's got a different personality. I mean, that's the truth. What I like to see, you know, the team treated fairly, and if Trish makes a mistake, Cooney makes a mistake, Carter Williams makes a mistake, that you got to take him aside and talk to him. Yes, but do I understand in being a boss and being a business owner that there's a certain way that you have to talk to people and you can get the same point across by talking in a different way? Yeah, I understand that too. So I can understand if that's what's going on, and nobody knows the inner workings of Boeheim sitting down with Michael Carter Williams at any given time in practice or in his office or wherever, whatever that may be. I can say that Michael Carter-Williams has taken somewhat of a leadership role this season, but not as much as Brandon Trish. And I will say this about those two added into Jeremy Grant and C.J. Fair. I dub them the Feisty Four. What do you think about the fact of having them in that scenario?
Yeah, they're definitely an aggressive combo of players to have out on the floor at the same time, and it's really nice to see. I mean, it was funny to watch the press conference last night because Jim Boeheim, you know, kind of I wanted Grant to do anything but shoot in that play, and you know, I mean, give the kid credit. I mean, he's going to go to that rim and he's going to go to it hard, and you know, if he doesn't sink that shot, you know, there's a foul on that. You know, I mean, if it didn't happen to go back in. I think that there was a lot of contact on that play that probably went unchecked. But, I mean, you got to give the kid credit. He's aggressive, and I like seeing that out of him.
No, I think Jeremy Grant definitely has come up as of late. I mean, this is a guy who, I had said it before, played 10 minutes between Providence and South Florida combined, then goes to 29 minutes, 35 minutes, and almost 30 minutes against Cincinnati, and asked to go out there and start for the first time ever, asked to go out there and come in the second half and start once again. I mean, I think that that's saying a lot, because Boeheim will say it over and over again that, you know, you don't start freshmen because there's guys that are ahead of them that are going to make it, going to do a better job. And Jeremy Grant's number three on the list typically. It goes C.J. Fair, James Sutherland, then Jeremy Grant at the very least. And so, you know, to see him step up and come in, I think, you know, Boeheim's making a statement to Jeremy, and Jeremy's answering that statement. He led the team in rebounds against Cincinnati, highly on the defensive end with six, had seven overall. But this is a guy that's constantly being competitive, and he's right there with C.J. Fair. C.J. had six rebounds, one offense, five on defense. So he's right there with a guy who knows that he has to take a veteran leadership role. So I think that's saying a lot about the team. Anything else that you've seen from Syracuse recently that you wanted to mention?
Well, I'd say that, you know, their defense, the intensity that they're playing with on defense is really nice to see. I mean, what they held Peyton Siva to, what, 3 points? You know, this guy only averages 4 points a game. That's what it was. He averages 4 points a game in his last two games against us, or his last three games against us. I mean, they did a great job of locking him out and keeping him out of the play. They did a great job keeping Kashmir Wright out of the play. So I like the way we're playing defense right now, you know, and I mean, the way we play defense, when Georgetown shows up, they're only going to score 30.
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, when you see some of these teams, and like you said, you know, Georgetown, a lower scoring team, plays heavy defense and wants to keep you in that Butler area, you know, but the Louisville Cardinals tried to do it, and, you know, they stayed right with their average. They average about 23 point attempts per game. They took 20. They only made 7. And then you see Cincinnati, who turned on a little bit in the second half, but in the first half it only made 4 of 18. In the second half, I believe it was 6 of 14, somewhere around there. But, you know, this is how teams have decided they want to beat Syracuse. You know, you saw Providence connect from deep in part of their game. South Florida got it done early. Louisville was trying to do it, move the ball around. And then you see it with Cincinnati. It's really the live and die by that three-point shot. And in Syracuse's favor, they've been able to edge these teams. But, you know, my wonder, my curiosity is what happens when you go up against a team even like a Vermont that happened in the first round of the NCAA tournament a few years ago that just doesn't miss, that is shooting 60% throughout the game. Where does a Syracuse team go from there? Because a 2-3 zone, which I played in my life, it is not something that's made to go up against the three-point shot. And I think if some of these teams start turning on, Syracuse is going to be in trouble, because even Boeheim admitted the team is not making their jump shots as much as he wants them to.
No, I know, but, you know, it's been that way for, I mean, it's been that way for 30 years at Syracuse. You know, the teams that beat us are the teams that get hot from three, you know, and the thing is that really when people get that hot from three-point range, it's tough to beat them anyway. I mean, if you're having that good of a shooting night, I mean, yeah, they got to get out a little better on the shooters, and they got to be, you know, a little more aware at you know, finding the shooters, because there was a couple of times where Jeremy Grant made a couple of freshman mistakes. He got, you know, caught up too far. He got caught up too far at the top of the zone on the help side, and you know, couldn't get back to the corner in time to cover the shot. You know, but that's going to happen. I mean, you got a new kid that's, you know, or you know, I mean, he's a freshman and he's going to make those mistakes. And it's kind of like, you know, it was kind of like the James Sutherland thing. I think we talked about this earlier. You know, James Sutherland's defense had been progressing very nicely before he had to sit. You know, because he had the time in the game to actually play defense. Whereas before this year, he was just a put him in, let him shoot kind of player.
Yeah, you know, and I think that, you know, as much as, you know, from what you said, James Sutherland being better on the defense, you know, it's something that, you know, I contradict. I don't think he's ever really been a defensive factor. I mean, there's been a couple games here and there, but one thing that I took from him not being on the team is Syracuse doesn't lose consistency, because the Arkansas game was not something that was happening every other day or every day. I mean, that 35 points, 27 from three, that doesn't happen for him that often. When you go down the line, there's a lot of games where he was under 10 points a game, nowhere close to Brandon Trish or CJ Fair. And at the same time, a defensive non-factor. He wasn't a guy that was pulling down a lot of boards. He wasn't a guy that was blocking a lot of shots. It's been Rakeem Christmas. And that's really been the one thing that Rakeem's been doing well this season, is blocking shots. He's not getting a lot of rebounds. He's getting maybe two a game, one offense, one defense. So, you know, I think the loss of James Sutherland, and I said it when I was on the radio in Kentucky, in the Louisville game it didn't matter, because when Syracuse went to the Yum Center last season, Sutherland only had 4 points and really didn't contribute much of anything. So there wasn't any loss there. I think defensively he needs to get better, but I said it before and I'll say it again. If we weren't talking about Sutherland and we were talking about the loss of CJ Fair, then I would definitely say that this team in the NCAA tournament would not be going far.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, it's pretty easy. I mean, well, yesterday doesn't really show it, but, you know, generally you can replace production, you know, for the points. You know, and Grant's been doing okay on defense, and he'll do better as the year goes on, so I'm not terribly concerned about it. But I've got to get a move on, sir, and you have yourself a wonderful afternoon, and I will see you next Sunday for the Super Bowl.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you do well, too, and bring out whoever you want to that Super Bowl and let everybody know about it, just as we are. Super Bowl at Woody's Party in Mattydale, right across the street from Northern Lights, and you can get the directions on the leaderboard page of wakeupcalldt.com. So get yourself over there. It starts at 4 o'clock and runs all the way through the Super Bowl. As always, Brian, it's a pleasure.
Take it easy, sir.
All right, take care.